Shoot, man.
Work's going good, though?
Work's good. Work's slow. Slow right now. Usually this time of year gets slow. I don't know why. You know, I guess just holidays, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, all back to back.
Is that across the insurance industry, or is that like specific to your, like to State Farm?
No, I think it's a lot of different industries that get slow, but I don't know if it's all State Farm, but my office has always been, my office has always slowed down this time of year. I don't know why. And I try to not buy into that and stay busy and generate business. But it's like, this time of year is like, life is telling me like, hey bro, it ain't gonna happen. Chill out.
It's the holidays, man. Take a break.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, sure, whatever. I tried.
You don't do claims though, right?
No. I don't handle the claims.
Right. So like, it's not slow because there's lack of shit happening.
Right. That stuff's always gonna happen. Yeah. Just nobody's buying anything. Hmm. You know. I guess people are pinching pennies where they can pinch pennies. So I've had a lot of customers, extra cars, things like that. They're selling them. They're getting rid of those extra cars. And the only thing I can chalk it up to is they just don't want the expense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, as you guys deal with home insurance too, right? Mm-hmm. I know, I mean, just for us, you know, like as a national average, the real estate industry peaks in the spring and summer. And then fall, and it kind of hits a low every year. Not even on, even in an increasing market, no one wants to move over Christmas. No one wants to move. You know, like everyone's.
Yeah.
I mean, people really try and move during the summer when their kids aren't in school. You know, anyone that has kids, so they can not have to pull their kid out of a school and then put them in the next year, or they can do that and it's not in the middle of the school year. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. In our industry, they probably follow that same mentality.
Yeah.
You know. They go hand in hand, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think that, you know, if someone's buying a house, they need insurance, so they're going to get busier when that season peaks. That's interesting with the cars, though. Like, I wouldn't.
It's weird.
I would actually think during, like, Black Friday, end of year, holiday sales, you would see more new purchases.
Yeah, it's weird. It doesn't happen. But January 1st?
It's.
Dude. It's on. It's like. Okay. Or was that 2 weeks ago?
Right.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't get it.
No.
No explanation.
It's the way it is. How long have you been doing it?
Almost 6 years. It's almost, what, April? Well, I have finished my sixth year as an agency owner, but.
Nice.
I was in an insurance since 2008. Did actually handle claims before that.
So okay.
I was an adjuster. Catastrophe work. So
we will stay far.
So. Me and Jezza, my wife, we both did it. We started as independents. So, you know, you're 1099, and you basically have like a middleman, a company that contracts with the insurance companies. They put you to work. But it just so happened that our first gig was State Farm, and most of the gigs that we did were State Farm. So,
gotcha.
Fell in love with State Farm, but we did do other insurance companies as well.
Yeah, we actually did go the employee route 2013 as adjusters.
And then left that to pursue a beer company.
That's right.
Start a brewery.
That's right.
Yeah. That was crazy.
Is that still open?
Yeah.
What's it called?
Chandelier Island Brewing Company.
Chandelier Island Brewing Company.
Yeah, Gulfport, Mississippi.
All right. Next time, instead of White Claws, I want
Chandelier. Freemasons. That's what,
there you go. Yeah. Bring it in.
It's good stuff. But my goal was to always be in agency.
Yeah.
I had my own State Farm agency. And, the opportunity presented itself and I hopped on.
Nice, man. That's what brought you to Emerald Coast, right?
Yeah.
I say Emerald Coast. I mean, I know you were in Mississippi before, which is further west on the Gulf, but that's what brought you to the Fort Walton area.
Yeah. So the agency brought me here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
The opportunity.
Yeah.
So yeah, we moved here. 6 years ago. Yep. Crazy.
Has it been that long?
Time flies.
That's crazy.
When we met, was that the first place you lived here?
Nah.
Okay. That makes more sense because I was like, man, I didn't feel like it's been 6 years.
Yeah, we moved in December of 17.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm right at 6 years.
And when did you move in to the place where we lived?
January before COVID, January 20th.
Okay, that timeline sounds more accurate. I was like, dude, I haven't known you for 6 years.
It was four.
Yeah, that was almost fun.
How much did we drink, Doug?
That was perfect, though. We were like right next to each other. We were in the same neighborhood. Let's walk across.
Fires, you know.
Let's send it, man.
Chill.
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, at least we were in Florida, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like being in Florida.
I look back on that and remember all the info we were getting. They gotta shut everything down.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on?
Everything shut down for a little bit here. I kind of had a distorted perspective from being in the military. I mean, my life kind of revolved around going to work and coming home. So I just wasn't out in the community as much. You know what I mean? I think as a lot of people who were driving around, seeing stuff, going to houses. And the military was, propaganda feels like a strong word, but there was a lot of information that turned out to be
false.
Maybe not 100% accurate. And it was just wild, man. Like, the lengths that everyone went through for COVID.
Panic.
Yeah.
Just panic.
Yeah.
People didn't use any common sense or logic. Oh. Just panic.
Oh.
Like, everybody ran for the exit when you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
And trampled everybody.
Yeah. Well, when I first got up there, you know, they were like, all right, everyone has to test for what? First of all, like, for military, if we didn't have to be there, then we just didn't. And I was like, okay, sure.
See ya.
So, and then, like, I wasn't trying to get out of work. I was willing to work, but I was like,
what's the point of going in?
You don't want me here. My job as a survival instructor is to train. I have to be face to face with people. Right. Like, there's nothing to do. So, if we're just going to shut down and postpone training, then let me know when to show up, dude, and we'll send it. But, so I just didn't buck back at first. I was like, okay, I'll take 4 months off. No problem. You know, call me if you need me. But, then when we went back, it was like testing for everyone, and then it was testing for some people, and then it was, I mean, and directly, like, opposite of what some of the CDC guidelines were saying. They were trying to keep up with it, but it was changing every day. You know, so it was interesting. My opinions are mine and not that of the United States Air Force. I'm still technically in, so I think that's what I'm supposed to say.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. I get out in July next year.
Realist?
I said that. No, man, it was good. I love being in the Air Force, but it was a good time to get out. You know, if I was going to try and do an active duty retirement, I was only at 9 years. I was 12 years total time, but 3 of it was on reserve years. So it was very, very minimal, just weekend warrior stuff for like 3 years. So I would have had to do 11 more years full time. And I was just, didn't have the appetite for it. And kind of talking to Courtney, I was like, am I really going to suit the position well if I'm not even halfway through and I'm already kind of jaded to it? Then, yeah, probably better right now.
Yeah.
But technically I'm still on inactive status until July of next year.
I'd be super jaded too, though.
It happens.
Whatever.
But, no, it was fun. Well, I learned a lot. Had a good time. Like I said, other than my back and my knees being completely destroyed, I'm good.
It should be a disability.
Disability is another fun fight. It's almost as fun as being in active duty. That's about a 2-year adventure now. So we're working on it. Four Vets Consulting is a consulting company. So my idea initially when I did my initial idea was that a lot of these companies will say whatever increase we get you, we'll take. Like, I think I talked to 5 or 6 companies, almost all of them were pretty close to like either your full entitlement for 5 months or half your entitlement for 10 months was kind of what they're like. You had to pay like $1,000 up front. And then that was how much they took. So I was at 30% at the time when I first started diving into this. And I was like, why would I pay them half of 30 to my goal is to get to 100 based on what the VA's guidelines are? That's where I should be at. Why would I pay them half of 30 to 100? I'll get myself up as high as I can. And then I'll pay them half of, you know, 80 or 90 up to 100. So it'll just be less out of pocket. I ended up not going with one of those companies mostly because the company I did end up going with is owned by a guy who is a prior Sears specialist, so it's in the same career field. So I kind of had that immediate like trust because I knew what he'd been through and stuff. His name's Luke. He's like, I think he just got good at it doing it himself. And then people asked him for help and he helped them. And then they were like, you're great at this, man. You should start a business. So then he kicked it up. But if anyone's looking for VA help, Four Vets Consulting, they've been great so far. I mean, I don't have my results back, but they don't do the take money after you get your rating. It's a one-time flat fee. It's more out of pocket up front. I think it was $2,500 up front. But then I won't have to, like, once I get my rating, it's all mine. The way it would have worked out, I'm at 90 right now, so 90 to 100. It would have worked out to be somewhere between $8,000 and $10,000 with all the other companies. So I was like, and no one guarantees anything. They can't guarantee.
Right.
They can't guarantee an increase. So it's a process, man. It's working through it. I just don't understand it. Like, I don't think anyone does. Every time I'm like, I don't get this. Can you help me understand it? They're like, nope. Just, it is the way it is.
You didn't check the correct box.
No.
So
didn't check the correct box or just conflicting information.
We actually don't ever have you enrolled in the military. What are you doing?
That happened to my brother-in-law. No shit, that happened to my brother-in-law.
Why am I not surprised?
4 years in the Marine Corps, came back. He's like, here's all my stuff. They're like, you were in the Marine Corps? He's like, what are you talking about? I just got back from war. Yeah, he was in 99 to 2003. I think those are the right dates. But like, 2001, right? Yeah. I don't know what happened, 9/11. So like the kickoff of the 20-year war. Yeah. And he went and deployed and did all kinds of crazy shit. And it took him 7 years. 7 years before they would like, oh yeah, you were in.
It took 7 years to get that straightened out? Hmm?
The speed of the VA.
How did...
No idea. No. It's wild, man.
Wow.
Absolutely wild. It sucks because I know some people, I've built relationships with some people in the VA and they're great. You know what I mean? They're super helpful.
But to a certain point, their hands get tired.
They want to help the vet, but they're like, there's only so much I can do in this position. I can't go any further. But I've had people that were, well, I don't want to say anything. I don't want to get anyone in trouble, but I've had really helpful people within the VA. And even though they're doing everything they can, it's like, I can't change the system. I can just help the individual within the system. So, yeah, man, it's a process. So we'll get there. I went through. So the way that his company works, at least Four Vets Consulting, the VA wants to see stuff written a very specific way. Migraines is probably the easiest example that I've heard of. If you go in and you tell them, like, I've been through all these different things, I've had head trauma, concussions, exploded, and if you write down in your paperwork, I have debilitating migraines every day that require me to go, like, be in a dark room, put an ice pack on my head, it's not a rating. They're like, well, that's not a thing. You have to use the word prostrating. At least it's my understanding of the way it's written. So if you don't use the word prostrating, the VA doesn't consider it a rating. That's my understanding of it. So then, you know, like you have someone goes in, it's like, I have these horrible debilitating migraines and I can't do anything when I get them. And they're like, sorry. But if you say I have, you know, twice a month prostrating migraines, I think it's 50%, something like that.
Jeez.
Yeah, but it's just the stuff like that, I think, that pisses a lot of people off. So this company that I'm using...
Well, same in medical field. If you don't use the right code,
right,
it's not covered.
The company I use has providers who understand that, and basically they're translators. So the vet's like, I have debilitating migraines. And
that's right.
Right. The provider knows the VA needs to see this verbiage and written out this way. And then when they turn that in, then it's in the VA's language. Well, I think a lot of guys go in and they write it in their own language and then they try and submit it and it just gets kicked back as like either not being covered or some other crap. So
sad.
It's too bad, man. Yeah.
It's sad.
I wish they'd put more effort towards it, but it's
an overhaul.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too much. There's like too many, I think there's too many moving parts and pieces. You know, you go to, it's kind of like the joke about the DMV, where you gotta like stand in one line to get the piece of paper, to stand in the next line to turn the piece of paper. Yeah. Like if you never to actually go see the person you need to see, and they're like, oh, you turned in the wrong form, go just back to square one. That's kind of what it reminds me of. And it's just constant, you know? So, anyways, enough complaining about the VA.
It sucks.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Josette doing anything in the insurance world still?
No, she's she was doing real estate, and she's just been focusing on being a stay-at-home mom recently. She likes it. No stress.
Yeah.
She's been under stress.
Stay-at-home mom is no stress.
But she does get stressed out. The kids are a lot. I mean, you have
two tiny terrorists in your house, dude.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. You know, there's no way I could do it. Especially before the kids went to school.
Yeah.
Like, not happening. Like, I had to do it a couple of times. I'm like, I gotta go to work.
Yeah.
Like,
work's easy.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
I'll leave. Bye. Yeah, so kudos to her. Because in any state of a mom, that's tough.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
It's constant. You know? There's no putting it away.
Yeah, in school, when they go to school, now there's a, last week before Halloween, there was a different outfit they had to wear every day for school. So she's busy making outfits and getting ideas and doing this and that. And she's like, oh my God, what is going on? Meanwhile, I'm at work like, okay, sure.
I love the schools and all their ideas. And they're like, and this week we're doing this. It's like, why am I involved again? You know, there's all these, I mean, it's good to have the parents involved, but it's a lot too. I mean, we homeschool, so we're... But we have a program that she goes to, and it's like school twice a week. So it's good. Gets her exposed to like classroom stuff.
Nice.
But also like still with the homeschool vein. So it's small. I think her class has like 10 kids in it, and they're all.
She likes it.
Yeah. Yeah. She loves it. It's good for her too. Homeschool kids. I think there's pros and cons to both, obviously. But one of the big cons is especially like we have. Paisley's her only child, so she doesn't learn to play together. Not even the social. We do a lot to keep her social, but like cooperating with others on projects. You know what I mean? Having structure with other people in place, like you're going to have any work, you know, unless you're a YouTuber. It's a job, man.
People.
Even then, you still got to cooperate with whoever you're doing, you know, your editors and producers and that kind of stuff, if you're going to be serious about it. So, the social aspect's actually pretty easy. We got a pretty good community of homeschoolers here, but everything's unstructured when we get together with other kids. So it's like, go to the park and play. We go to the beach. We meet up with people, sports, stuff like that. When the coach kind of takes over, but that kind of working together, sitting next to the same people week after week, being in a small space.
Yeah.
But it's good for her. She likes it. So
good, man.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. You guys are doing, you're doing insurance in Fort Walmart?
Yeah, my office is in Mary Esther.
Okay.
Brandon Lewis State Farm, 425 East Hollywood Boulevard, Mary Esther, Florida.
Brandon Lewis State Farm. Yeah. Are you supposed to like do a take each time so you can get it to sublimity set in?
Brandon Lewis State Farm, 850-586-7040.
Send it.
No, but, yeah, man, insurance is crazy right now. Property side, I mean, as you know,
yeah.
I just read an article yesterday. We'll see a little bit of relief here first quarter next year. There's 5 new carriers coming to the state.
Nice,
yeah. Which helps tremendously because you need that competition for rate purposes,
right?
You know,
all right.
But yeah, man, it's been a disarray the past 3 years. It's crazy.
It's been so challenging, man. I mean. With our house, it's like, oh, no, we don't cover there. We won't do that. And, you know, there's no other explanation given. It's like, oh, we don't service that area.
Good yeah, luck. And you got to, I hate to say it, you got to talk to somebody to know what's going on behind the scenes because to your average customer, even some of my customers, they'll call and, you know, why did my rate do this? And look, it all boils down to business, right? The more money that goes out, the more money that has to come in. But you got to focus on why the money went out as a consumer, right? So there's been, I won't even get into the details because I don't want to name any industries or anything, but there's been a ton of frivolous lawsuits against insurance companies that really, really put a financial strain on them. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I mean, I guess depending on how you look at it, you know, when your financial rating is affected as an insurance carrier, that jeopardizes your ability to sell insurance in the state of Florida. So, because and your average customer doesn't know that insurance companies have insurance to cover their insurance called reinsurance, right? So the reinsurance market is done by the largest insurers in the world. So you're Lloyd's,
right?
So all of these insurance companies, in order to sell insurance in the state, have to purchase
insurance,
right? And you're thinking like, what? how does that make any sense?
Right. No, it makes sense to me.
Yeah. That's
the way it works.
Yeah, it's the way it works. So you have to get reinsurance, and then also your financial rating determines how solvent you'll be in the state. And if that's ever falls below, let's say, a certain level, then you're not allowed to sell insurance in the state, and you become insolvent.
Gotcha.
Not necessarily bankrupt or anything. You're not at that financial level where you need to be stable in the state, and you got to leave the state. And that's what happened to a lot of companies. And that combined with all these lawsuits just drove prices way up.
Yeah.
I mean, just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, ours is on one of our rental properties went up 180%.
Yeah, it's insane.
And I mean, we ended up selling the property. So, you know, we're not worried about it anymore. But I think last year, like 2022, that calendar year, we were like at like 2000. And then our new quote was like 4,800 or something.
Yeah, it's insane.
It was like, this is bananas. Like,
yeah. And people, and I get it because they don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but they think that the increases are from storm damage. I mean, we had Ida, which was pretty bad, and Michael in 18.
Right.
That's not the debilitating cause of these increases or debilitating to the insurance companies. It's those frivolous lawsuits that have just really bled them dry, really.
Is that like people trying to, say, find loopholes in the way the insurance policies are written to try and get stuff covered that really has no business being covered?
Yeah. So there's a certain industry that found a loophole in the legal system.
Right.
That's really attack insurance companies,
right? Which sucks because if they're truly doing it for the good of the customer, because the customer needs to be making a claim before they're considered like negligent on their property and that they can't be covered for it. That's different than just trying to find customers to make claims simply for the fact of them making money, right? You know, which seems to be more of what it boils down to.
Yeah, there's a lot of preying on. There's a lot of preying on homeowners that didn't understand the process or anything really having to do with it. We got a lot of people taking advantage of on the homeowner side that caused a riff in this industry.
Yeah.
It's just, and that's why DeSantis had to step in.
Yeah.
He had to pass legislation to stop this because if he didn't, the entire market would just, we would have had like a 08 crash for insurance in Florida.
Right.
I mean, it would have been devastating.
Right.
It's crazy. I mean, Citizens is now a top 10 insurer in the country. They only insure in Florida and Louisiana, as far as I know.
I thought they were only in Florida. I didn't even know they were in Louisiana, so that's news to me.
So, top 10 insurer in the country. I mean, what does that tell you? Right. Citizens isn't a bad company. They're a not-for-profit insurance company.
Right.
So, they don't need to be the largest insurer in Florida because that's bad for business.
Right.
It's bad for any company. Bigger you are, the more exposure you have.
I just saw a thing today, actually, that was, I don't remember the numbers, but if you have Citizens and it's a second home, because Florida's got a lot of second homeowners. They got a lot of investors for short-term rentals and just people buy vacation homes on the beach. They go up and work in New York and then they come down here. You know, when it gets freezing up there. For primary home ownership,
it's capped.
It's capped. I think at 10% a year that Citizens can increase. But for secondary homes, I think they're going to like take the reins off and hopefully that should help balance out the market.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like,
I think 5 new carriers coming in, it's going to be really good.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely going to help. That's going to help in the short term. You know, the long-term relief, as far as working through all those lawsuits that are still in the system, that might be another year before seeing the relief on that. And then rates will really come down.
Yeah.
But I got to say this too. I think as Americans, and I don't have any evidence. I assume this. I don't know why, but I assume as Americans, because everybody you talk to, everywhere you go, it's all the same kind of conversation with insurance, or you get the same examples. Americans like to file claims. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they like to file claims. Yeah. And insurance really isn't there for your everyday claim. It's there for catastrophic situations, right?
Right.
I mean, if your roof blows off in a storm, yeah, file a claim.
Right.
But if you got a limb that blew through your window and damaged the carpet in that room, do you really need to file a claim?
Right.
I mean, you got your deductible, and your deductible might cover it. You know what I mean? So it's
right.
It's and that's on the home. That's on the property side. Like, on the auto side, it's really bad. You know, and this is another thing too. People, almost everybody I talk to, doesn't realize that when they file a glass claim, even though you say the word claim, that it counts as a claim on your insurance. It's a claim
for glass.
For glass,
yeah. Like a chip.
Chip. So,
okay. I'm assuming that affects rates. Then
I'll get to that. I'll circle back to that.
Okay. Soon.
Just like emergency roadside service, like towing, battery jump, with all that counts as a claim. Now, those aren't at fault claims, right? So, insurance, at least with State Farm, you can only surcharge an at fault accident.
Okay.
Or we can only surcharge an at fault accident. So, if you're at fault, you cause the damage, we can surcharge your policy, right? That's when your rates go up. But if it's a comprehensive claim, so like glass, towing, car stolen, anything like that, that's not an at fault claim. We don't surcharge you. Can't surcharge you for that. Okay. But it's still claim activity.
Right.
Okay. So,
is this all insurers, or is this State Farm?
I can only speak for us.
Okay.
You know, I'd hate to blanket.
Yeah. No. I just.
Yeah, I can only speak for us. But claim activity. And here's the kicker: even if you're not at fault, it's still claim activity, right? And that goes into the algorithms that insurance company release does that we run. I mean, there's another side of that coin. Glass claims, the customer doesn't, they're not always informed correctly by companies that replace glass.
Okay.
Right? Glass company, you're trying to get the biggest bill possible. I would imagine that would be through a windshield replacement as opposed to a chip repair.
Right.
But what I've seen is the customer gives their insurance information to the glass company. Glass company files a claim, and they get it paid, right? As they should, right? But they're not always informed of, if they don't speak to us, like if they go directly to the glass company and it goes that way, they're not always informed that it's an actual claim.
Right.
Even with the, you know, one free windshield a year, that's still a claim on your record.
Right.
Right. So I say that because claim activity can affect eligibility.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
Might not necessarily affect your rate, but it can affect eligibility. You got so many claims in a certain amount of time, insurance company may say, hey,
right,
we're losing money here. We're going
to
make a decision soon.
Yeah.
That was a long discussion on that. But yeah, I try to tell everybody, like, look, if it's a chip, get it fixed. It costs you $60.
Right.
You know, a lot better than filing on your insurance. You know, if it's not devastating or catastrophic, then I try to walk people through it and say, look, you know, this is what could happen. Can you afford this? Can you not afford this? You know, is it worth it in the long run? Things like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know what people are doing, but I mean, we've had to make a few claims. You know, we had a house in Panama City after Hurricane Michael, like it's Category 5 hurricane, parked on top of the city that our house is in. So,
yeah,
there's going to be a claim that comes from that. You know,
we've got claims.
Yeah. Right. Any big hurricane's going to come through. I think we had leaking in a roof, you know, that kind of popped up. So we made a claim on that. But, you know, I called my insurance adjuster and was just like, hey, you know, what do you advise? What do we need to be doing? I wasn't just trying to get things covered for the sake of getting things covered. I think that's where some people are trying to manipulate the system, not realizing they're probably doing more harm than good.
Right.
For everyone and long term for themselves. You know, if they're not eligible anymore, well, have fun.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
But when do you see more claims with cars or homes?
Oh, cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Is it like major stuff with cars or is it windshield stuff?
Tons of windshields.
Okay.
Tons of towing. I'm not saying don't use those. That's what they're there for, but
yeah.
There comes a time, you know, it can get abused. But yeah, definitely way more auto claims, for sure. And nobody can drive.
Been on these roads. Is there anything, like, a person can do to get their rate to be lower that doesn't affect their coverage?
Yeah, yeah. So without changing their policy in it to get the rate lower, yeah. So the big ticket items are obviously no tickets, no accidents,
okay.
Right? At-fault accidents. And believe it or not, credit. Your credit will affect your rate. And all insurance companies use a credit model too. The talk of going away from that, but for right now, it's still part of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, credit has a lot to do with it. It's crazy. But those are when your claims history.
Okay.
That goes into effect. So insurance companies will look at claims history, and then based on the claims history, they'll come up with a calculation of your propensity to file a claim based on previous claims history.
Right.
And that can affect your rate.
Right. I've heard stuff like, I think the rumor I heard, and I just never cared to ask because it didn't matter to me, but like having a bright colored car.
No. Completely false.
All right. That's what I figured. Yeah. It seemed.
Yeah. Everybody, the red.
Yeah.
Because a red color is more expensive. No, it's all.
BS.
BS.
Yeah. Any other myths?
It has nothing to do with it. So another myth is, I'm older, I haven't had any accidents in 40 years, I should be getting a really low rate. And I hate to tell you, the older you get, the higher your rate is going to go. So the sweet spot is between like 30 and 60, right? So you got 30 good years of good rate.
Gotcha.
The younger, if you're a youthful driver, a youthful operator, so that's 16 to 25 years old, it's just going to be high.
Right.
It is what it is because you're that youthful operator. But also when you hit 65 and start getting older, your rate increases as well. Because this, it's all stats. This isn't just the company's not coming up with some kind of, you know what?
Right. Screw old people.
Yeah, that driver sucked. He was running off the road. I'm rising his rate. No, it's statistically speaking, the older you get, the crappier you're driving.
I've joked before, when I get old, I'm just going to get a reinforced car with like real, like armored up car,
dude, you know,
big bumpers. And then
the Tesla truck.
Just keep driving, just driving. Oh, sorry. Just keep going, man.
The Tesla truck, man. Bulletproof.
It's awesome. And aeroproof.
I was listening to Joe Rogan and Elon Musk Halloween episode on the way over. Dude, yeah, it's bulletproof. You can get bulletproof glass too. It doesn't come with it, but you can get it.
Yeah, the windows won't roll up.
But they won't roll up for now. Yeah. But Joe Rogan, like, I bet he can pierce it with an arrow.
Yeah.
And Elon's like, they can.
Yeah. They
went out and 80-pound compound bow, whatever, shot it, and it just flattened the air.
Yeah, just exploded. That was cool. Did you see the first demo that Elon Musk did with the Cybertruck? This was years ago.
With the windshield?
Yeah, with the windows.
And he's like, they won't crack.
Yeah. Crack. Blow up both of them. He's like, we got some work. That's what these are for. I think he said
it's like 7 years ago, man.
They're supposed to start delivering them next month, right?
Yeah, next month.
Nice. That'll be a Merry Christmas for some people.
It'll be cool.
Hopefully they're still good in the financial situation because it was a real low down payment to get on that waiting list.
It was like $1,000 or something?
$100. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people said BS or not. I never actually heard Elon say it in any interviews or anything, but that it was basically just a campaign to raise money. Because he's like, if I have this awesome product and put the entry level for it to reserve a spot of super low, we'll get way more people to do it. So I don't remember what the numbers were, but he raised some ungodly amount of money on a vehicle that had no actual promise of delivery yet. You know, it was just like, this is the product. It's pretty cool. $100 to be on the waiting list, and then just got floods of people in.
Dude, he said their goal is to make 200,000 of those. And he said that the manufacturing process is the hardest part of the whole thing. He said people don't realize how good Henry Ford was at coming up with that. And he's the true hero.
The assembly line.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. We figured
the truck's 0 to 60 in 3 seconds.
It's such a unique product. It's not like, I mean, for all these other companies, right? If you go look at any midsize SUV, they're almost the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, just tweak the robot to be like, this, yeah. You know, and like, it's fine. But it's a completely different material from the body of the vehicle to the only, like, it's all new. It's not, I think they look wild. I would love to have
never been made before.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That's a weird looking deal. It looks like space rock on wheels or something.
They look weird, but I would for sure drive one. Like if someone was like, would you want this? Yeah, absolutely. It's cheap, too. I mean, considering what you're getting. Bulletproof vehicle, 0-60 in under 3 seconds. I think the most expensive version is like $70,000.
Damn.
I mean, that's cheaper than most brand new trucks.
So there's no drivetrain. It's all flat and everything.
Flat bottom like a Hummer.
And they have the highest rise.
Clearance, yeah, it'd be fun. I mean, I think it's a great deal. I don't get involved with all the crap. Like, is this actually clean versus is it not clean based off of the amount of mining that happens? I think everything that, you know, it's all polluting the environment one way or the other. Like energy, right?
We're all screwed.
I don't know what the law of energy is, but if you can't be, you're gonna have to have so much output for so much input. It's just it's gotta balance out. But I just want to do it because I think they're real cool. They can drive themselves. Just push a button. Take me home. Just hang out.
I love that. I hate driving.
I...
Because you actually trust it. Type A. I'm type A.
You got a seatbelt?
I don't know. Somebody hacks that code and it's self-driving thing.
Oh, yeah. Seatbelt. I had a... We just went to Tennessee to visit my in-laws and we rented a... What's the biggest Ford SUV? Explorer?
Expedition, like EL?
Yeah. It was bike. Like the big one is that it's the upgrade. It's a 2023. I don't want to do its nicest stuff. I'm not a big fan of Fords personally because every time I get in one, something breaks within 3 seconds. But the lane departure and the distance following from the last time I've been in a vehicle that had both. Last time I was in a vehicle that had both, like, it could kind of keep you in the lane, but it kind of just ping-ponged you.
The same lane you get over.
Yeah, until you were, like, out of the lane. I mean, this one, just, like, every 20 seconds, I just kind of had to touch the steering wheel a little bit, and it kept me... And, like, curves, all kind of... I mean, it was highway driving, right? So it wasn't going to work for... It wasn't going to work for city streets or anything, because it's just... It's not self-driving. It's lane departure stuff.
Isn't that crazy?
It's cool, man. I just sat there, didn't have to touch anything. I was still very engaged with the road and the drive, but it was really nice. Like, if I needed to get a drink of water, then I can, like, look down. And, I mean, it took me 2 hours with the driving, because it was a 10-hour drive. So, like, really fully, like, trust it to take my eyes off the road for 2 seconds to pick up water. But you do it anyways. When you're driving, you're like, yeah, got to get this from my cup holder, pick something up, you know, changing the radio station. But it was sweet, yeah. It made driving real nice.
Yeah.
So just, like, very... relaxing. I would never felt like I was like, oh god, that was cool. Yeah,
that's wild.
It was an enjoyable 8 to 10 hour drive.
Ugh.
Each way. We'll say that. But
I ain't been in the car. Yeah,
I don't mind it. Depends what I'm doing, I guess. You know, if I just have to drive, that kind of sucks. But like, I don't want to commute far to work. I don't want to have like a 2 hour commute. I was never into that. But if I have to drive 10 hours to get somewhere cool, like, it doesn't bother me. You know, so it just kind of depends. In high school, I was working for a construction company for a little bit. And it was an hour and a half commute in the mornings. And then with traffic coming home, it was closer to 2 hours. So I was like 3.5 hours in the car. And I wouldn't even drive when I carpooled with someone. But I was just like, this sucks, dude. This is stupid. It's almost half my workday. Like,
dude. Think about the city people. City slickers.
No.
Dude, like half your career's in a car or subway, train, whatever.
Man, I never really thought about it as a kid. My dad's a cop, right? So as a kid, I was like, oh, you just go out and beat up bad guys. Like that was the mindset I had. And then as an adult, we look at them like those dudes spend like 90% of their day just sitting in a car, you know, doing nothing. I mean, just sitting there waiting for some activity to happen. It's wild.
Boring.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do it.
Couldn't do it. Not for those reasons. I just couldn't do it.
No.
Kudos to those guys, because I
Yeah, for sure. After deploying and put it more into perspective for me, I applied to the police department at one point in Southern California. I did when I was much younger. And it was what my dad did. I thought it'd be cool. Pay was pretty good out there. Even for the cost of California, it was still pretty good pay. But then having gone and deployed, and like, there's someone that is probably going to see me today that wants to kill me just because of the way I'm dressed. They don't know who I am. They don't know anything about me. Just they know what I stand for because of the clothes I'm wearing. And they want to kill me because of that and only because of that. And then I thought about that with the cops. I was like, God, that's every day. Every day you get up and go to work. There's someone that hates you because you're a cop. You know, and like, sure, there's bad cops. Bad cops suck and need to be punished. But I mean, my experience with cops, no one hates a bad cop more than good cops.
Right.
You know, 99% of them are good cops because it's the bad ones that give all the rest of them a bad name.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think I could deal with it. Stress, anxiety. I mean, significant PTSD.
Burnout. Yeah, I mean, that's...
Yeah. They're the first ones getting to scenes of all the horrible shit that you call the cops for that you don't want to be involved with. All the stuff you're afraid of or someone's intruding, you know.
Yeah, I mean, can you... Just a traffic stop. Can you imagine walking up to a dark car and not knowing what's inside?
Nope.
Like, no way.
Right. Well, every time, I mean, complacency kills. So you can't be complacent, which means you got to be on edge, which... You know, that's such a fine balance. Like, you want to walk up and be like a friendly, nice cop so you don't give cops a bad name because people are real soft. If you come up, I mean, I had people that I talked to just directly, not mean, not yelling, just directly, and like got mad at me. I was like, what are you talking about? You know, I can't imagine being a cop and now you're in the position of authority. You got to like really ride that fine line, but you can't get complacent because then that's when, you know, bad shit's gonna happen.
Yeah.
It's wild. But no, I'm glad someone does it.
Yeah, for sure.
But I'm glad it's not me. We had a situation up in Niceville. I don't know if you saw that in the news, but some guy pretty close to where we live actually. I don't know all the details of it, but I know that the street was shut down for like 8 hours. Bomb squad was there, SWAT was there, they had the whole road closed down. I saw pictures of like snipers on the roof across the street. Yeah, they were shooting gas into his house all day. Something happened. They called the cops. He wouldn't come out. He wouldn't surrender. And then they was like, it's like an 8-hour standoff before they pulled this guy out of his house. They had to go into his house a few times. He was hiding up in the attic. I don't know what the initial call was, but I don't know what happened afterwards.
Nobody got hurt.
Not that I'm aware of, but I mean, there's nothing in the news, nothing big about it, like no officer fatalities and stuff. They arrested him at the end of the day, but he's back out, hanging out at home. So I don't know if he's on like made bail and he's just waiting for a trial or I don't know what it is.
Yeah, bad day.
But one has bad days, man. That's a real bad one.
So tell me about the industry, man. Real estate industry, you guys, and the reason I ask is crazy because, you know, you've got your referral partners, I've got my referral partners. You know, you talk, you see,
yeah.
It's like, man, and we're slow, I hadn't really paid attention, but then I started thinking about it the other day, I'm like, I haven't got an email from X, Y, and Z in a long time, I wonder if it's slowed down, it's slow in the real estate, or,
yeah, for sure. Rates went up, I think it was kind of like a trifecta, almost. It was during COVID, rates hit stupid.
Rock bottom.
Like, lower than they've ever been in the history of mortgages.
Your best spoiled.
Right. Which caused a lot of people, I think, to have an unrealistic expectation of what a mortgage is. That caused prices to skyrocket, obviously, right? This is super cheap. I can charge more for my house. So you had kind of that happening. COVID happened. So specifically in Florida, where we were mostly free of lockdowns and restrictions for most of COVID. And a lot of people were like, hang on, I can work remote for forever and you're going to pay me the same wages or similar wages. And I can go work. I can go down to the beach and not live in New York anymore. Make New York wages, live in Florida, don't have all the restrictions. So we had just a flood of out-of-state buyers coming in.
And then you had a bunch of realtors join the industry. 2019, 2020, 2021, it was like, oh, this is easy money. I just exist with a name tag on, and people are like, I need to sell my house because I can sell it for, you know, 50% over list price and have multiple offers and cash offers. So it was kind of quick. So now that rates have gone up and COVID's over, so rates are up, that slows things down. COVID's over, so people are
not being locked down
where they're at. So if they didn't move in that time, they're like, well, fine, we'll stay here.
And then just, you know, as good of a realtor as I am, like, if your wife's in real estate, you're not going to use me. Even if your wife doesn't do real estate. So you have all these realtors that join the market, and it's like, well, my sister's real estate agent, or my wife is, or my husband, or my golf buddy's wife, like my best friend, you know. So you just have a lot more agents to service traditionally the same amount of people. But rates have, for like a week in a row now, come down. So yeah, it's good. I think it'll help kind of fix things. What surprised me was rates went up and prices didn't seem to drop very much. They did a little bit, but not as much as I was expecting. So
yeah, I don't see the rates really coming down either. I think it's the new norm.
Well, so, you know, it's only a little bit above average. I think the problem, that's a good word for it, is, you know, rolling the clock 10 years, rates were close to where they are now, but prices were a quarter of what they are.
Right.
So, you know, you just have these massively inflated prices. So one or the other has to drop because people are being pushed out of the housing market. We'll see how it goes. But this year alone, last stat I heard was last month, was 70,000 agents have left the career field because it's
in Florida?
Nationwide.
Nationwide.
Mm-hmm. I say agents, realtors. Like, that was the National Association of Realtors.
Yeah. And you don't know if they're actively, you know, doing anything or not. Like, you know?
Yeah. So it'll take, it's all cyclical. You know, it goes up, it goes down. I think we're just kind of on a downhill trend, which is always interesting because everyone, not everyone, someone's selling their house and they're like, well, my next door neighbor sold 2 years ago and they got $500,000 for theirs. I'm like, that's cool. They sold it, you know, 3% interest rate. I would love to get you $500,000. Like, if there was someone out there willing to pay it, I'm all for it. But yeah, it's just not going to happen. So I think it's a hard pill to swallow for people that kind of had the, I should have sold 2 years ago, I told you so, you know.
Even on the flip side of that, you know, I'm going to wait to buy till the rates come down. They haven't come down. I should have bought 2 years ago.
Right.
You know?
Right. Man, I'm just preaching it from the rooftops. Like, just buy. Just buy. Don't stop trying to wait for the rates to come down. You know, there are points in history. Yeah, you could be waiting 20 years. Seriously. Like, you could wait 20 years before they come down. I hope not. I would love it if they would come back down to the fives. Like, that's a really good historical norm. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think about my first house, it was 4.875.
Yeah. In the 80s, they were 18.
Yeah, oh yeah.
18%. No, houses were cheaper, so it's relative to your monthly payment, right? Which is what I keep, like, trying to get to people. Like, quit worrying about the rates and the price of the house, worry about your monthly payment. If I told you that the rates were 50%, the house costs $1 million, but through some kind of loan magic over a 3,000-year loan, I can get you a $20 a month payment. Would you buy the house? Yeah, of course you would, because it's $20 a month and you get a sweet house for it. You know, so your monthly burden is, I think, what people need to be looking at more than what are today's rates and what is the housing cost. Yeah. Like, if you can find a house that meets 80% of your needs and is within your monthly budget, buy it.
Date the rate, marry the house.
There you go. Yeah, you can refinance it. And you know, I had people that were hesitant to buy when they were in the sixes. And I just had a meeting with the guy.
Pretty good right now.
I just had a meeting with the guy like a week ago. And he was like, I'm so glad I bought. Because he was going to buy no matter what. You know what I mean? He's like, I'm so glad I didn't wait. I was really on the edge of waiting for rates to come down. And he would still be paying someone else's mortgage, not his. So, and that's another thing. Like, are you going to live somewhere? Are you going to be homeless? You're going to live somewhere? You're paying someone's mortgage.
Yeah.
Someone is having their principal payment knocked down.
Right.
just you got to decide it's going to be you. It's kind of like if you want to be in the real estate game, right? Like, be a homeowner, you just have to, like, step one is to have a token to play. Well, that's your first house. Might not be the house you want, might not be the house you need, unless you are some kind of trust fund baby. Like, it's not your forever home. No one has the money on their first house. And if you're not getting into it till you're 30 or 40 or 50, then okay. Hey, you should have bought 30 years ago. You should have bought 2 years ago. You should have bought, you know, when the housing market crashed in 2008, but you didn't. So quit saying when you should buy, buy today. You know, and then when the rates come down, refinance. But if you don't have a token, you can't move up to the next level.
Yeah.
You can't buy the bigger chip without the starter one. So
yeah, not for sure.
But no, man, it's good. Like I'm really enjoying it. I like doing the job. I like talking to people. So
yeah, man, I've seen you in your infancy, and you're a little baby, little baby real estate agent.
Getting it, man.
And I've watched you grow and blossom into this. This adult real estate agent.
Yeah, now I get to bring Brandon Lewis State Farm to the Emerald Coast Essentials podcast.
That's really good.
So that's good, man. You ready to get some dinner?
Yeah.
All right, dude. Let's go. Thanks for watching. How do people get a hold of you?
Online, BrandonLewisInsurance.com, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, or excuse me, X.
X. Where's it going? Get it right, dude.
Yeah.
Formerly Twitter.
Yeah. Send an email, Brandon@BrandonLewisInsurance.com, or give us a call, 850-586-7040.
Sweet, man. I'll put it in the show notes and the details. So if anyone needs them, any parting words of wisdom from an insurance agent?
Your agent doesn't make the rate. So
I like that.
Don't shoot the messenger.
There you go. I love that. They're not bad people. Maybe some of them are bad people, but he's not. Thanks, man.
Thanks.